The Oral History Program of the Foundation for Iranian Studies, Interview with Dr. Royce, Interviewer Hormuz Hikmat, Washington, D.C., June the 6th, 1991.
Okay, I returned to the States from Iran in September of 62, and I went back to start my second year at Foreign Service School in Georgetown. At that time, the Foreign Service School and Georgetown had no Farsi. It did have Arabic, which I didn't go into at that point. And it had very little really about Middle Eastern studies. This was a period when, as you know, also Mr. Heck, Dr. Heckman, there was very little in the States on these topics. And what there was wasn't really relevant to the present. It was all connected to the past. So I continued my studies. At that time, when I came back in 62, I moved off campus with this friend of mine, his roommate, who had invited me around this first place. This was sitting in Mr. Navisi. And there were, at that time at George, well, all in all, there were very few Iranian students, in the States. And in Washington, there were two or three at Howard who were still around, most of them in Washington, doing one thing or another. I didn't know any at American University or at GW. I doubt if there really were any then. Georgetown, there were only three or four. There was, of course, Sadegh Gupzadeh, who we, I guess, talked about the last time. Who was then quite well known amongst the Iranian students in the States. Because the year before, Zahedi, I think by the time by 63, I think definitely Zahedi was no longer ambassador. I think it was Gotzi Nachai, but I don't remember exactly.
My recollection is that Gotzi Nachai was the ambassador.
Yeah, I think it is. And Gotzi Nachai, he was some sort of a relative of this friend of mine, Mr. Nafisi, so we got to know him. But he was a very unusual, strange character. I never quite figured how he ever made it in the foreign ministry.
Gotzi Nachai, you talking about?
Yeah, he was a very strange guy. He was a very sort of poetic and rather out of it politically type, he always struck me. But anyway, he was, for reasons I didn't understand then and don't understand now, for a couple of years he was in.
Did you get a chance to see him?
Oh, yes! Oh, yes.
Through whom?
Through Nafisi.
I see.
He was somehow, well, if you really want to know, one of Nafisi's paternal uncle's wives, the wife of a paternal uncle of Nafisi, was somehow related to Gotzi Nachai. So, Gotzadeh had really made a name for himself, as you remember. I think in 61 or so.
Did you get to meet him too?
Oh, I knew Gotzadeh very well. Hmm. But Gotzadeh, at that party, Nowruz party that Ardashir had, and he raised all his wasn't. So Gotzadeh amongst the Iranians was quite a personality. Everybody, regardless of their background or so forth, was rather taken by Gotzadeh's courage and sort of daring and charisma. Because quite frankly, I don't think I knew any Iranian student of that period in the States who didn't sort of feel like Gotzadeh, now that the Shah must go, but that it was a dictatorial, terrible regime for Iran. Really, I mean, you were there, you know. But very few people, were quite as outspoken as Gotzadeh.
Who else among the Iranian students?
Okay, amongst the Iranian students, at that time, at Georgetown, there was this Gotzadeh Nafisi, a woman who really wasn't involved in anything, and a guy called Hussein Goli Samson Bakhtiari, who was sort of a nice guy who had quite a bit of money and was studying languages and was a good sidekick of Gopsadeh. Where I got to know more active, and then there was a guy who came through to study English who was somehow related to Nafisi, called Siavashe Dehesh, who now is in Houston, who's somehow in the oil business one way or another. Mm-hmm. And anyway, and somehow related to Nemazi, you know, the rich Hajj man. Anyway, so the next summer, the summer of 1963, they used to have linguistic language workshops around the country. It just happened that summer that the language, Farsi language, Middle East language thing was at Georgetown. And so I decided to take, to start Farsi there. And we learned, it was strictly spoken Farsi. They didn't even teach us the alphabet, but it was helpful. And the teacher was a woman, a Chinese woman actually, who was a linguist, called Jackie Wei, whom you, I'm sure, know through all this. And her so-called native informant was a fascinating woman called Mina Jahan, who was the wife of Majid Tehranian, right?
Mina Jahan.
Mina, what did I say?
Ami.
Oh, sorry, Mina. Okay, Mina Jahan. And so we got to know them, and they were renting an apartment in Washington for the summer, and so lots of times we'd go, and they knew, I can't remember if Hussein and Afisi introduced them to Sadegh, or they knew Sadegh. They might not have known Sadegh before that summer. Anyway, so we used to go there a lot. They ran an apartment in Southwest Washington, the towers actually near my office, which we knew then. And they had a very interesting friend who got to know, who I got along with very well, and Nafisi got along very well with, called Kevane Tabari, who was here that summer to do research on his dissertation Library of Congress. And of course, also we got to know at that time the Aipur Hadi, who was, is, and will be forever, you know, in the Library of Congress. And so anyway, we got to know each other, and we got to know through them. I guess Hossein got to know Shahina Fatemi somehow, and he was here. And then they, one of the people at Howard, who was very also very involved in all these confederations, that was this guy, Garib, this big guy, he's here now, who's a husband of a friend of Mrs. Bahari.
Right.
He was very active with his brother. He had a brother and a cousin. They were very involved.
Did you feel sympathetic towards their political
ideas
in terms of,
of course,
being critical of the Iranian regime?
Of course, very much so.
Why?
Because
how much did you know about the Iranian situation?
Well, I knew most of what I, well, I knew quite a lot from the year I was there.
Right.
The
year,
not
or
the
few
year,
months?
The 3 months I was there. And I knew that generally, you know, the students certainly thought the regime was brutal. And that, as I told you, when when I was there in 62, people talked. When I went back in 68, the sort of climate of fear was, it was a totally different thing. But in between, you'd had Punzai Cordon and all sorts of things. I'll be very frank with you, you know. No, generally the feeling that it was a dictatorial regime, that it was a cruel regime. People really didn't talk very much. Was it doing much for the advancement of Iran or not? They didn't seem to care much about that. What they really cared about were the human rights issues. And the human rights issues were the basic thing. It certainly made sense to me. And
were you yourself politically
I really wasn't, quite frankly. And to give you an example how this hit home, The Fuentura School had a magazine, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, in between sort of late 62, early 63, on the excuse that the Majlis elections were rigged, the Shah closed the Majlis, right?
61.
61? Mm-hmm. Is it still open? But anyway, right. That whole issue of the closing, things like that, really, upset people. And I remember this Jose Nafisi wrote an article just in a student publication in Georgetown about the problems of lack of democracy and lack of human rights and so forth in Iran. And to show how the regime worked, he got a letter from his father, who was in Iran, and this is probably in 62 when this happened, before I went to Iran. He got a letter from his father that the Savak had visited his father, who was a government employee, etc., and really sort of, told him, if your son doesn't shut up, he's going to be trouble, and you're going to be trouble. That's what happened. Somehow, this article that Hossein wrote had got to Radio Baku. And Radio Baku had broadcast this, that the son of so-and-so had written this article and so forth. It was just a little publication.
Somehow it strikes me that all the Iranians that you knew at the time were politically active and conscious and were critical. Did you know anyone who were not political?
Never met one.
How come?
I don't think they existed. They didn't exist around here.
Not in Washington.
No.
That they were either neutral towards the regime or were not that political.
I met none that were neutral toward the regime. Really? Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, I really didn't.
Not supportive, obviously. Then.
Nobody supported. And Jose was a very critical guy. He had. He knew Shanna's very well when they were in the embassy, when before I got there. Obviously, he was a year ahead of me. At Georgetown, he used to go and have dinner Sunday nights, with Zahedi and Shanna's and so forth. But because he knew him, but he certainly was critical of the regime. Quite frankly, no, I really.
Did you?
I think Iran at that point, of the Iranians I met. Everybody was critical. Now, some would take the ones who just came from Iran, like this Dehesh, or another guy who was somehow connected to Hossein, whose name I forgot, at first a little reluctant.
Kevan Tabari wasn't critical of the regime at that time.
He was terribly critical of the regime at that time. With us he was.
That's not my recollection.
With us he was.
He was. Okay.
Privately he was. Maybe not in publicly, uh-huh. Maybe not in New York. Mm-hmm. But when he was in Washington doing research with Tehran and Mina and these various Fatimis flowing around, and he was. And
did you attend any of the meetings of the
Confederation? The only thing I attended was there was a... and then of course, then through them I met, I think, the most interesting of the bunch, even more interesting than Kofzadeh Abrahamian, who I find always a rather fascinating character. And somehow Abrahamian floated in that somewhere. Floats, he's sort of like an old, if you really watch these sort of movies from the 30s about the... the anarchist or the Marxist organizer who sort of floats through, doesn't have a suitcase, maybe has a razor and a toothbrush, sleeps on the floor in the corner. That's my...
in the mold of the leftist.
I think he first floated into my life that summer.
This is in 1963.
Yeah, and he's been floating in and out ever since. I really do like him very much, personally. But, the only thing I attended And I don't know if you were you there then? Were you in New York that
yes.
summer? Okay. They had this bizarre idea that they were going to get buses from New Washington, Philadelphia, New York, and all meet at Atlantic City. And they had this, on the beach in Atlantic City, they had this sort of picnic and demonstrations and so forth. Do you remember that?
I think I was there.
Yeah. Okay, so, I don't know, they sort of, Hossein sort of convinced me this would really be, well, I guess Mina was the...
Were you accepted by these activists as a sympathetic American?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
No suspicion?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. No. And it's very strange, because while lots of Iranians are very suspicious, of the Iranians I met from that period in Iran, I don't think anybody's very suspicious of me at all. But anyway, people like Yervan or Kayvan or Majid or Mina. But anyway, so I went along and also in the same class, in the same language class, this was the first exposure to Persian Iranians of James Bill. And James Bill came along on the bus too, I think. Maybe he didn't. But anyway, it was terribly disorganized. It was absolute chaos. And the three or four buses come from me from different places, couldn't find each other. Remember, then they wanted to start fires and do kebab on the beach, and then the police came and said they couldn't. And it was sort of very chaotic, but it was my first big exposure in the States to this sort of thing. I never really attended... Okay, then somehow that summer or the next summer, sort of Hossein's style was sort of cramped because Derek Sheshin kicked his father out of the Ministry of Education and his father was made, guardian of Iranian students or whatever, Sarparasti, don't you? Mm-hmm. Here. So Hossein's father arrived here. Hossein... stayed with an apartment, but his father was here in that house somewhere out in Maryland, I don't remember where. And of course his father was to supervise and watch out for all these crazy Iranian students.
During this time you were continuing your
education? Oh yeah, sure. For a long time, until 61 to 65. So I remember Hossein, we had an apartment. Hossein, and the building which still exists in sort of the outskirts of Georgetown, the corner of 35th and R Street. And Hossein, that summer and later, used to try to organize sort of gatherings with people like Gopsadeh and his father and so forth. But his father had a number of sort of goon types that he had brought with him
from Iran.
And one guy, you must know this guy. And later he became very important, I heard. Ebi. Anyway, the name will come back. Oh, and there's a guy who's here.
What was their function?
They were students who came on scholarships, but they somehow, I guess, were supposed to, you know, they were more sympathetic with the regime. Mm-hmm. And there's a guy you must know. Nadir knows. He's got a PhD in education. He's a assistant superintendent or something in the district schools.
Now here?
Yeah. Who's originally Iranian? He was one of those guys. Anyway, so those were very interesting meetings, and Hossein and so forth, and Gopzadeh, and you know, at least socially, Kayvan was with Majid and Mina all the time. And Kayvan went to that picnic in New York on the beach. Mm-hmm. So I always thought, you know, Kayvan was part of that group. But I only learned later, I guess from Yuzan, that he wasn't, you know, so involved with them as I thought. So that's about it. And those were really the only Iranians in Georgetown. Then, maybe the next summer, this same thing was at Michigan. And I went, that's the summer of 64. And I went to Ann Arbor for, and in Ann Arbor, I learned, you know, the beginnings of reading and writing Farsi, as well as, you know, learning more about spoken Farsi. And one person I met there, that's where I met, I guess the first time I met, Marhume Oye Elohi, who was the student there. And I think really the only Iranian, a woman who was a graduate student there was the assistant to Alan Luther who taught us. But I think the only Iranian I met at Michigan that summer was Oye Elohi. And
Sirusela.
Yeah. And so that's about it. Then
did you after graduation, yeah, which was 1965.
Then I got a scholarship to go to Princeton for advanced studies, a very good grant. And I was at Princeton 3 years, and I studied Arabic as well as Farsi, and a lot of Middle Eastern history, sociology in the Middle East, and so forth. At that time, there were practically no Iranians at Princeton at all. Mm. When I came back from Iran later, in the 70s, there were, but in 68, there were practically no Iranians. And the only Iranian I remember was a guy who was in, he was in comparative literature, a graduate student in comparative literature, who was a TA in Farsi, called Arbabi Shiraz, Arbabi Isfahani is his family name, Said Arbabi Isfahani, Arbabi Isfahani, not Arbabi, Arbabi Isfahani, and he later went back to Jundi Shapur University and became, I don't know, some, you know, vice chancellor or something at Jundi Shapur, whose room was English language and literature. Did you ever run into him?
No.
He wasn't very, he wasn't at all activist, but he was, you know, he was anti-regime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a period, too, when none of these people were the least bit Islamic. Qutzadeh apparently had, I later learned from Hussein, had always had good connections with Bazargan, but he certainly didn't, maybe it wasn't politically wise to come out that way, because certainly nobody else was particularly Islamic, the people I knew. I mean, there were these Berkeley people, the Texas people I learned about later, but I had no exposure to them at all. About Iranians and politics, then one of the more interesting experiences I had, about maybe 67? What was it? No, it was after I came back from Iran. No, sorry. So anyway, that was about my, and then in Princeton, as I said, there were really very few Iranians.
You stayed in
Princeton? There were some, I take back, there were two graduate students at Princeton, in the graduate college, when I was there, one was a guy who was really also rather unpleasant and never smiled and so forth, and was turned out Islami, called Ali Sabzavari, who got a PhD in some sort of engineering, and ended up in Shiraz, you know, he's Isfahani, but he ended up in Pahlavi University.
Mm-hmm.
Very unpleasant, sort of grumpy type, and I knew him when I went to Shiraz, and Bahram told me that he went 100% with the Islamics.
Isn't he the same fellow who represents Iranian intersection here in Washington?
That's Sabzalion. This is Sabzavari. Sabzavari Isfahani, man. Sabzavari. Then there was a marvelous guy. Again, these guys were engineer types, they weren't very political at all, called Arsalane Garamani, who's Shirazi, and he's still at Shiraz University, friend of Bahram.
Did So when you...
So that's about it. Then, one of the more interesting things about 68, and somebody I really kept contact with and I found very helpful and informative, was Ibrahimia. And I used to go in must have been 60, before he got married, must have been 66. When was Bahman Ghashqai
executed, you mean?
When did he have, yeah, when was he, when did he have, when was his revolt going on? Was that about 66?
I'm not sure.
Okay, no. Well, when his revolt was going on, somehow, and I can't remember exactly where I met Ibrahimian, it was through Mina and so forth, but somehow, somebody I always kept up contact with that group was Ibrahimian. And I used to go in sometimes to do things, if there were programs at Columbia, I'd go in. I remember the year, must have been 66 or something, that Hafez Farmayan was there, and he had some really ridiculous lectures trying to defend the Shah. That I came in from Princeton.
I did this was at Columbia.
Columbia, yeah. Were you there or not?
60.
This must have been 66 or so.
66.
It was before Yervan got married, which must have been by 66. So then he used to have a really cruddy apartment with Farhad Khamsi. And I used to go in there sometime from New York, from Princeton. And sometimes spend, if I was doing something in New York, I could just sleep on the floor. It was very sort of fly. And I also met through them this Reza Sheikh al Islami. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, now I know how I got to know these people better. In the summer of 65, or summer of 66, I took a course in the summer in Russian. At Columbia. And I knew Yervan, I guess I met Sheikh al Islami then. I never couldn't figure him out then, I can't figure him out now. But I liked Yervan very much. And Khamsi I liked. He was very gentle and very nice. And then when I come in, then I had some exposure. The reason I asked you about Bahman and Rashfari is it was a really cruddy, and I don't know what group this was politically. Because it wasn't today, and none of these other groups existed then. Man's Confederation. But there was really a cruddy, cruddy loft somewhere near Port Authority bus terminal.
Mm-hmm.
This was really before armed struggle was much and before anything had been defined. But, I went a couple times there on Friday, and they had Friday nights. They had things on Friday nights. And I used to go with Yervan. Again, I was the only Khariji. And except for a very, and I think I've still got it, there was a really strange character who apparently used to float around in all these leftist things in New York. This wasn't that regime. This was very leftist. And sort of a hippie type with a knapsack where he had the works of Chairman Mao in about 20 languages, and he would know which groups were meeting.
Do you remember his name?
No, I just remember this guy appearing. And I remember I bought, he goofed, he didn't have Chairman Mao in Farsi, but he had in Arabic, but just for fun I bought it, and I think I still have it. But anyway, so I used to go several times, and they were always having things about Bahman Ghashqai. Do you know that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, that episode I don't.
Oh. No. And Farhad Khamsi was there too. But nobody else I can remember. I mean, Sheikh al-Islami definitely was not there. And I can't remember at this point anybody else. So that was essentially my exposure to Iranians in the States. In the period between the fall of 62 and the fall of 68, when I returned to Iran.
Between 68?
The fall of 62 and September 68, when I returned to Iran, when I went back to Iran to do research.
What was the reason you returned to Iran?
Okay, I returned to Iran because I had a Fulbright grant to do research on a topic that, you know, it took me years and years to narrow down. But at that point, I was interested in learning about Sufi brotherhoods in Iran in the 19th and maybe early 20th century, something nobody really knew much about. So forth, so on. And on my way to Iran,
at a Fulbright scholarship?
Yeah, Fulbright scholarship. I stopped in Switzerland, and Hossein had known very well and had written me a letter of introduction to Mr. Jamalzadeh, whom I went to visit. And he, in turn, wrote me some letters of introduction to people. It was really a great help. And I arrived, you know, in Iran, and I remember it was very funny. It was just a hotel called the Hotel Sina, which was on Takhta Jamshid. The reason I remember this is there had just been the earthquake, I think, in Khorasan, that summer before that. And there was some big fundraiser too. So it was very shalom in the bog, and we couldn't sleep because all these people were there, you know, eating dinner at midnight was just sort of new to us. And you know, staying up to 4 in the morning and then get up at 7 in the morning and go to work, which is something I still can't understand. How the Iranians do it. Right? But, and they really do it, don't they? But anyway, so I had this grant, and you know, I could use Tehran University libraries and stuff, and I had introduction to...
And you resided in Tehran?
Yeah, I resided in Tehran for 2 years. And basically research, mostly research. I got to know some professors and sent him some courses to Tehran University. I had one professor, a guy called Saadeddin Guharin, who was a Rumi specialist but knew a lot about what I was interested in, who was very helpful to me. And maybe one of the things I'll talk about is Dr. Guharin, because this was totally new to me. I had from my professor in Princeton a letter of introduction, and really I worked with him more than I worked with anybody. But I remember, you know, when I got to Tehran, I called him, I went to visit him, and you know, I had I know this is, you know, how on the record or off the record, but anyway, so I might as well.
Yes.
I don't know how much I should say. But anyway, I got to know this guy, and he was very interesting. And through him, I met a lot of older people who were interested in literature, sort of Dr. Yegane types. Mm-hmm. He was a friend of Dr. Yegane, that sort of type. Type who, you know, is equally comfortable in his salon, equally comfortable on the floor. Cross Dr. Yegane out of your day, by the way. But sort of that type. Mm-hmm. So I got to know through him a lot of people of this type, and a lot of people who were sort of survivors of the constitutional period, who helped me in my research, and that was very interesting.
And you had registered in the university?
I hadn't registered, no, but I had you know, research facility. But one of the persons, I used to go to the university and to the Bashka, and I knew the other foreign students in Tehran and so forth. But probably, you know, to cut things short and through, hi, salam alaikum, how's your mahtuve? I mean, really, there's so much I have to limit. But Dr. Guharin and his friends were very helpful. I learned a lot about traditional Iranian culture. I got to know people like Nur Ali Khan Burman, and Anyway, let's talk about three types of Iranians I met, or four types, I guess. One through Dr. Gouharian, mostly people involved who were interested in Sufism, people who were very interested in things like Persian music, like Nur Ali Khan and Boroumand, and Bahari and Hossein Tehrani, and through Dr. Gouharian, got to sit in on a lot of their parties, which were a lot of very interesting for me, but very different from anything I'd been used to. That's one thing. Second, which was in the long run for Iranian politics, one of the most interesting things for me. And all these guys who used to come to Gouharian, some were ex-ministers, ex-governors, ex-this and that. Nobody was particularly pro-Shah. I think a lot of them had been Tudeh or...
Did they really express their views about the regime?
They would some? Because they had...
It was limited.
No, because they had particular social habits.
I see.
Mm-hmm. And they used to get very relaxed
and then talk a lot.
Yeah, and become brave, exactly. So anyway, that's one thing. Probably in many ways politically, for political insights into Iran, the most interesting thing, because I'd met a different kind of person, because through Nafisi or even Gouharian or other people, I'd meet people who were educated, who had a lot of family background, whatever that means, but they thought they did, and from moderate to at least adequate money. But at that time, the Iran-American Society in Tehran had, I think they closed it in the mid or late 70s, which was a big mistake. They had a student center near the university. And this student center near the university was very, very interesting, because unlike Abbasabad, where they got Bachar Deir, Tio, and Tito, they got at this one near the university, mostly sort of middle class or lower middle class kids from the provinces who had come to Tehran University.
Just to learn English?
No.
Like the other one?
This had everything. It had movies. Mm-hmm. It was a real sort of student center, regardless of, run by a very interesting woman called Khalid Ziyai. And it was very interesting. And one of the things, they didn't have English classes at all. But what they had were, they had mostly...
What was it called?
As a matter of fact, Markaz-e Donishjuan or something like that. Markaz-e Donishjuan. It was on Shah Reza, across the university.
But connected with the Iran-American
Society? Yeah. It was very different. And they had like ping pong, and a chess club, and a library.
Like a youth club.
Yeah, like a youth club.
Run by Americans.
Run by an Iranian woman. But it was part of Anjuman Iranian Rekhos. And anyway, they wanted volunteers from the Fulbright grantees to come there in the evenings and do English conversations.
Informally.
And I got to know a totally different type of person there that I probably wouldn't have met. And out of that bunch, and almost all the people I met there ended up one way or another on the winning side in the revolution. And it's a very, very strange story. I remember...
You kept remembering their names.
Oh, I always remember names. And they always remember me. And so we keep running in. Like I had an experience just yesterday. Where a guy somebody who is very involved in a Marxist Islamic bad nom amongst most of our friends group based in Baghdad at the moment arrived in town invited by some congresspeople, somebody from that group came to see me and said,
recently?
Very recently. So-and-so would really like to see you. And I said, you what? He said, he was in your English class at Tehran University in 1969. Okay?
So you did conduct English classes in that
They're not classes, they're these conversation groups. Just conversation groups. Who are you? What do you do today? Did you read anything interesting? You know, very informal. So he was, and lots of other people.
And you remember his name from that?
Of course I do, yeah. Now, again on this English thing, one of the most interesting things that happened, and it was sort of, this Mohandas, you know, always in and out, this Mohandas Nafisi character always appears in all this. It's very funny because, Nader was saying, you're going, these interviews with Hormuz. I bet all you do is tell him about Mohandas Nafisi. He said, why should I tell him? He said, no, of course not, but, I know how you work. I said, yeah, you're, anyway. So, Mohandas, one of my things was that, Mohandas Nafisi was almost neo-Nazi, and everything had to be planned, Achdung 1, 2, 3. So he had all his plans for me while I was in Iran, but I had my own plans for myself. But every once in a while, I let his plans encroach upon me. And he really was interesting because it's the last thing one would expect. He said to me that this must have been 69 or 70. He said to me, you really, you're learning a lot about Iran, doing the Sufi stuff, you meeting all these people, us, of course, our relatives, our friends, but you really got to know something about the mullahs. Okay? And he said, look, you're studying some Arabic in Princeton, but for your research and so forth, you need better Arabic. And I've got a friend who knows somebody who needs English. Have I ever told you this before?
Okay. No, you
haven't. Okay. So, I want to get you together. So, now he was no longer Modi, he wasn't in the Ministry of Education, but he was in some shura at the Ministry of Education. So, look, I want you to meet my friend because he wants to look you over and so forth. And we're together on this shura, and we're in the, 7 o'clock, the winter was very cold, very dark, to the old Ministry of Education, And so I went there, and they had these little houses in the garden that had been originally for the various wives of Zilla Sultan, who had built that place. But various commissions met in these little houses, so I went to this little house, and was a little curious about Mohandas Nafisi's friend, and they came out and waited in the waiting room. They came out of the commission, and of the seven or eight, there maybe a couple women, a number of men, looking very sort of now, they'd say, Tazwati, like Mohandas Nafisi, and then a rather roly-poly mullah with a black turban. And he introduced me to this roly-poly mullah, was Rezoi Borghei, who is somehow, who's an uncle of Borghei here. Mm-hmm. And he's been since the beginning of the revolution, the Islamic Republic representative in Dobay. But anyway, so he said, well, I have a friend who wants to learn English, and he'll work with you. He's studying English, but he can't speak it. And you studied Arabic, but you don't know that much Arabic, so it's good you and this friend of mine get together. So he and I were working in the Ministry of Education, near the American Embassy, in this Talimati Dini office, and we're rewriting the Talimati Dini book. So you come on, let's say every Thursday afternoon, or Thursday would have been for the main Wednesday afternoon, and maybe one other day, and you do a little English pronunciation with him, and he'll help you with your Arabic. So I had some Arabic text I couldn't understand. So I went and met this fascinating character called Bahonar, who was then a rather young Mullah Sufid, and we got to know each other very well. And we used to go on Friday, we used to walk to Pascale and meet his friends, and we used to go and so forth. Now, very interesting was that he never talked
politics
up to that point, at that point in politics. Now then, I got to know...
Did Bahonar, was he interested in learning English too?
Oh, very much. And he learned regular English with me. So anyway, but anyway...
On a regular basis?
Regular basis, like 2 days a week exchange, 1 hour English, 1 hour Arabic. Now, but this is where your family fits in. For my Sufi stuff, I was trying to interpret the symbols in some paintings. And a friend of mine, this is a whole new series of friends, maybe in another, who introduced me to Pahlavan. This is another type of person, and still spends a lot of time with Pahlavan, called Jawad Sayyar, whom you don't know, I don't think. But anyway, I asked Sayyar, who worked for Fahagahunar, if he could find me somebody who could help me with these symbols. And he introduced me to a really weird guy called Ali Askai Vali, who was sort of a Darvish type, who was a portrait painter. And I got to know Vali, and he's very interesting. And Vali's best friend, I mean, they were together.